Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on the environment, our relationships with it, impacts upon it. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us on the phone is our first guest. That's Jordan Clayton. He's the data collection officer with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and he's here to talk about the Utah Climate and Water Report for the month of May. Jordan, thanks so much for joining Nell and myself this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So give us a little background on the report. Start here. This is, because there's one in May, I'm assuming there's one for each month of the year. And who puts this together and what kind of data do you collect?
Well, yes, you are correct. We do publish these every month of the year. And we'll talk mostly about the June 1st report. But of course, I can reference back to previous reports if you're interested. And what we do is we put together, this is assembled by our office, the NRCS office out of Salt Lake City, or the Snow Survey Program. And what this report does is it combines information from the snowtell and the scan sites that we maintain and monitor. And snowtell sites are in the mountains that help us understand our snowpack and precipitation, temperature, all those kinds of things up in the mountain area. And we also have scan sites, which are weather stations that are more in agricultural and rangelands throughout the state of Utah as well. And so this report combines information from both of those, as you said, to provide a snapshot of current and past climatic conditions that we're hoping to prove useful for folks in agriculture and also various folks in the water user community in Utah.
So tell us what each of those snowtell and scan data collection sites look like. What is a weather station involved?
Yeah, they're very similar, but they have some key differences. That's a good question. The snowtell sites are really the key sites throughout the West, not just in Utah. The key sites that allow us to understand how much water is in our snowpack. There are other weather networks that can perhaps understand, the extent of the snow or maybe how deep it is. But it's really the snowtell network in Utah and beyond that measures with these large snow pillows the actual weight of the snowpack, and we can convert that to a water equivalent. And from that, what we do is we create water supply forecasts that water users throughout the West use to predict how much water we're going to have in our streams and reservoirs and those kinds of things. So the snowtell sites look like a weather station that has a big snow pillow on the ground. It also has a snow depth sensor that looks at how deep the snow is. We also have air temperature and soil moisture and overall precipitation at those sites. At the scan sites, we have a little bit of a different array of sensors. We don't have snow pillows at those sites, and usually we don't have snow depth sensors either because they're really more in valley locations. But we do have everything that's required to understand not just what's happening at the site, but if we want to use the measurements for calculations like how much evaporation is happening in that area, you can use the sensors like the tipping bucket precipitation, the net radiometer, we have wind sensors, we have soil moisture sensors at those sites. And again, that'll help provide information that's a little bit more geared towards agricultural and rangeland.
You also measure soil temperature, is that correct?
That is correct, yep.
And why is that important?
Well, we use the soil moisture and the soil temperature information for slightly different reasons. The soil moisture information winds up being a little bit more useful from a water supply perspective. We're exploring modeling how we can combine the snow water information with the soil water information to improve our predictions for how much water we're going to get when all the snow melts each year. The soil temperature information is a little bit more useful from the perspective of understanding fire hazard. Obviously, soil moisture is important for that too. But other conditions that may affect the amount of forage that we're going to have for our rangeland animals and other kinds of users of those areas where we're measuring the soil conditions.
All right, so let's go over the report. What were the big takeaways during the month of May?
Yeah, the month of May was disappointing from the perspective of wanting there to be more moisture. We only received, from a statewide perspective, we only received about 30% of the normal precipitation that we would receive in the state in our mountain locations in the month of May.
Hmm.
Even worse in our valley locations, where we really only received about a third of an inch of precipitation across the state in our valley locations. So May was pretty disappointing. That wound up creating a situation where we had in the mountain locations a very early, somewhat early snowmelt, and most of that water then passed out of move through the what we would call the soil moisture storage area up in the mountain locations and is now working its way through the watershed. But now if we look at the soil moisture up in our mountain conditions, we see that things are pretty dry relative to normal for this time of year. And that's just because normally right now we'd still be melting our snowpack, and most of that snow melt has already happened. We can come back to the storm that just happened here, this week. That changes the story a little bit. Mm. Maybe we'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. And as a result, now the soil temperatures and the moisture are both unusually high for this time of year because, again, we've already seen that passage of water. And so we don't have the kind of cool, damp soil anymore. It's a little bit more dried out, particularly still in southern Utah.
So let's, excuse me, let's focus on the valley conditions in particular. So the report notes that the percentage of Utah under drought conditions increased to about 90% of the state in May. So how is that defined? What are drought conditions?
Yeah, so we don't make that call. That's defined by the United States Drought Monitor. And there's a whole team of folks that put together those reports. They change every week. And actually, since this report came out, things have gotten worse in terms of the percent in Utah in drought. Statewide, it's still around 90-91%. But since that report came out, the percentage of the state that's in what we would call D2 drought, which is, they call it severe drought, but to put that in context, it goes from no drought, abnormally dry, moderate, severe, extreme, and then exceptional drought. So severe is not good, but it's not necessarily the worst on the list, but anyways, it is concerning. But now the state is at about 29-30% in that D2 severe drought category, where even just a week ago, that was only about 15%. Now that doesn't include the storm that we just had, and I think those numbers will change a little bit. But again, that is something to watch out for.
Right, and we're only going to see less precipitation as we come into our quote-unquote dry season, correct?
Well, yeah, a little bit of a mixed story there. You're right, from the water supply perspective, we get around 95% of our water from our snowpack. And so you're absolutely right. When we're considering what we would call hydrological drought, which not only combines what's happening currently with precipitation and soil moisture, but also considers how much we have stored in our reservoirs and things like that. In that sense, we have to appreciate that, yes, we have received more or less most of the water that we're going to get from this winter's snowpack, and we have to wait for most of the water to come from next year's runoff, after another snow year. That's a little different than, what we would call agricultural drought or meteorological drought, which are really more focused on soil moisture conditions or recent precipitation. And the United States Drought Monitor really focuses more on those conditions. So we could see a lessening of drought if, for example, we had really good, summer monsoon that soaked the whole state. That would be something that would potentially, depending on the magnitude of that monsoon, could potentially reduce the drought conditions. Because again, this drought monitor looks a little bit more at the present conditions and not as much at water stored.
So how are we doing year to date? Precipitation, drought conditions, et cetera, snowtell.
Okay, so we just jumped up to about 84% in the mountains. If we look at all the snowtell sites across the state, we went from around 80, maybe 79% before this storm came through to around 84% of normal. So we're still a little bit below average, but this storm was a big boost, particularly for the northern half of the state. Again, a boost of around 4 or 5% based on our water year-to-date accumulation. The water year is a little different than the calendar year. It starts in October 1st and it runs to the end of September. And we do that because, again, we get most of our important water in the state during the winter months. Just some other reasons why the water year is designed like that. But anyway, so we've jumped up to around 84% precipitation as of today.
Okay, so this storm was, like you say, it was a nice boost to our water supply across, the northern part of the state, or maybe across the entire state?
No, it was really across the northern part of the state, and I'm looking at the seven-day change in our precipitation totals at every one of our snowtell sites right now. I can pull this up through our website, and it really did particularly well for the Wasatch Plateau, the Wasatch Front, and the Uinta Mountains. Also, reasonably well up in the Bear Headwaters, Weber Headwaters, and some other areas of northern Utah did well. Southern Utah, southeastern Utah got a little bit of moisture, not bad, it needed it. Southwestern Utah really got messed by this storm, so it hasn't really shown up in those numbers. But yeah, the precipitation really did boost the totals for northern and central Utah in particular.
And overall, and you may have already said this too, our reservoirs are doing quite well.
Absolutely. The reservoirs are still benefiting from the outstanding snowpack that we had last, not this winter, but the year before. And so we had really great, like I say, snowpack the year before, and we didn't use up all that water, of course, just, you know, last summer. So there was a lot of carryover in our reservoirs coming into this snowpack season. So even though this snowpack wound up being a little disappointing, it still wasn't too bad. We were really doing well snowpack-wise until around the end of March. We were actually above 100%. But it was really around the end of March, towards the beginning of April, that things fell apart, where our precipitation really bottomed out, the temperatures warmed up, and the snowpack really fell apart. We were a little concerned about that months ago because we saw that the snow densities were high, and that meant that it wouldn't take much additional energy to take those snowpacks and start to melt them. And that's exactly what happened. And so, in any case, the snowpack this year, as it turned out by the end of the snow accumulation season, has been a little bit below average. We're still seeing some replenishment of our reservoirs from this year's snowpack, obviously, but not as good as the year before.
So as we come into this spring and summer season and we're looking ahead, what does this mean for our wildfire season? Like, what do warm, dry soils and a warm, dry season mean for that fire season?
Yeah, it's concerning. Of course, it's the combination of what you just said, the warmth and the dryness in the soils, particularly, you know, as we get into later and later portions of the summer. If we don't get the monsoon, we're going to see that soil moisture dry out into deeper and deeper layers, or I should say depths of the soil. I'm not a fire expert, but I know that the fire hazard community does use both our scan site information and our snowtell site information up in the mountains. Which hopefully will prove useful. We have sensors in the mountains at three different depths, at 2 inches down, 8 inches down, and 20 inches down. And they really tell three different stories. And the same thing in the valley locations where we have all those plus two more, a 4-inch sensor and a 40-inch sensor in addition to the others that I mentioned.
So, oh, wow.
Hopefully those sensors and that information does wind up being really helpful for the fire hazard community. And the website publishes the information. It's updated every hour, and of course you can see a lot in the hourly and the daily trends to help navigate that terrain.
We're speaking with Jordan Clayton. He's a supervisor and data collection officer with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and we're talking about the Utah Climate and Water Report that's put out each month by the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And again, what's the website people can go to get a copy of this report?
Well, it's kind of long and convoluted, so I'll just say if you Google NRCS, that stands for the Natural Resources Conservation Service, NRCS Snow Survey Utah, it'll take you right to our homepage.
Okay.
I'm curious to learn, how long has this monthly climate and water report been created, and what are the user groups? You know, you mentioned you hope this is useful for like the fire forecasting. What are the user groups that it's designed for?
Yeah, that's a good question. The report has been published around 10 to 15 years. I started with the Snow Survey Office in Utah in 2012, and the report was already being published at that time. I believe it started around 3 or 4 years before I started. So just give you a sense for how long this has been going on. And all those reports are archived on our webpage. So you can go back through and pull any that you like, or of course just email me and I'll help you find them. To answer the other part of your question, really the report is hopefully useful to a wide range of audience. Certainly the agricultural and range and water user community in Utah will find the information useful because it combines, again, the valley location, the scan information with the mountain locations, which is really more your water supply. But of course, we're increasingly seeing our reports that we publish year-round, the climate and water reports, and also our reports that we publish in the spring, which are our water supply outlook reports, which focus more on the snow and the snowtell sites. We're seeing all that being used increasingly by the recreational community as well. And not just those reports, the information from our website about the snowpack, about the soil moisture conditions, all that stuff is, I think, very useful for folks that want to get into these backcountry areas. If, for example, you're interested in how much snow is going to be on a certain road that you want to take to, you know, whatever your destination is, or maybe you shouldn't drive on the road because you can tell from the soil moisture that it's you know, it's going to be rutted out or whatever. You can get all that guidance from looking at these kinds of weather stations.
Do you do any looking ahead, any type of predictive forecast or so with respect to drought and soil moisture, et cetera?
We do and we don't. We do in the sense that we use our snowpack information combined with our precipitation we've received up in the mountains to create every year a water supply outlook report. Those are published every month from January through May. And in some years, if we're having a really good snow year, we'll publish another one in June. And what those do is they do provide a prediction from April, from the beginning of April to the end of July, of how much water we're going to get at all the gauging locations throughout the state. So at every one of those places in Utah where we have a stream gauge, it's telling us how much water is flowing, or maybe at a reservoir where we've got a gauge measuring the amount of water coming into that reservoir. Every one of those, we provide a prediction for in terms of the volume of water that we're going to get between the beginning of April and the end of July, and some other kind of more nuanced forecasts. So we do provide those water supply forecasts. But we don't provide our predictions regarding, you know, other climatic conditions, like what's going to happen with precipitation, what's going to happen with fire, those kinds of things, because that's really outside our wheelhouse. That's a little bit more the precipitation. Obviously, that's NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That's their game, and they're really good at it. So I'll leave that to them.
Right, right. How many years have you been doing this? Not you. I mean, how many years has this report been coming out?
Yeah, of course. So The snow survey program really changed in the late 1970s. That's when snowtell sites started getting installed throughout the West. And we had our first snowtell sites here in Utah in 1978, 1977, 1979. A whole bunch of them went in about a handful of years through about 1980, 81, which was great because they captured some really amazing snow years of 1983 and 1984. So there's some good information going back to that time in terms of the kinds of weather stations that I've been talking about. Now, of course, we have much longer term records than that. We have what are called snow courses that go back to the mid-1920s here in Utah. A couple locations in particular have been measured continuously since then. But for the snow courses, what that means is that somebody had to go out there and manually take a snow tube and measure the snowpack depth and the water equivalent only three times a year. And so, yes, we have really useful snow information going back to the 1920s, but those are only three-point measurements. I should say in time at a number of locations, but anyway, three measurements going back for each one of those years until we got to the snowtell system where now we have hourly information every day. It's all public. It's all free. It's all available on our website.
Wow. Do you publish an annual report?
No, that's a good question. We don't publish annual reports. We do provide sort of water year summaries that I suppose, you know, people could reference, but we don't publish a comprehensive end of water year report. That's something we could consider.
Yeah, because I'm obviously the next question then is, are you observing trends on a long-term basis with respect to precipitation, snowfall, soil moisture, soil temperature? Are we seeing, you know, trends unfolding on a year-by-year or decade-by-decade basis?
Yeah, so we see a couple different things. Certainly, our measurements that we're describing are contextualized by that historic information. So every time that I'm talking about something being a percent of normal, what that's doing is it's looking back at the last 20 to 30 years, depending on the parameter that we're talking about, and contextualizing it against all the other measurements for that day. So, again, we do use that historic information in that sense. And we can see, of course, you know, for a water year like this, when I say that it's gone up to 84% of normal, that's what I'm talking about. The soil moisture sensors went in more recently. They went in, by and large, by around 2005, 2006 at most of our snowtell sites. So we don't have the, you know, as long a picture at a lot of those sites, but that's still not bad, 10 to 15 years, and that still provides some pretty good context. Also because we've really seen some extremes in the last decade, which is a little bit of a segue to answer the other part of your question. We're not really in the business of looking at really long-term trends and trying to understand what's happening with the climate, but it's certainly been noteworthy that in the last decade in particular, we've seen some really large and record-breaking snowpack years in some areas in particular of the state. And conversely, we've seen some really record-breaking dry years, which have been hard to manage and deal with. Mm-hmm. And seeing both of those extremes repeatedly over the last decade is, of course, noteworthy.
Absolutely. It's something that we kind of hear as a recurring theme, I think, in a lot of our interviews, you know, more extremes.
That's right.
Right. That's the new normal. As Brian McInerney with the National Weather Service would tell us, this extremes are going to be more commonplace, extremes in
that's
weather.
Right.
But that also then leads to potential extremes in the data you track. And then it impacts our fire season, you know, in longevity, duration, and intensity. So it's all connected. Clayton, Jordan, you know that better than us.
Well, and Brian worked closely with the folks that make those predictions, and I think he was really helpful in helping to articulate that message across.
Well, unfortunately, it is time for us to wrap this up. So, Jordan, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll definitely plan to have you back to talk about our future monthly reports.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show.
That was Jordan Clayton, the data collection officer and one of the authors of the May Utah Climate and Water Report.